All right, folks, welcome back to yet another episode of, yes, that's right, Fresh Juice. I'm one of your hosts, Tommy Fresh, and joined, as always, it is...
Maddie Juice, Juice, Juice. What's going on, everybody? I am in a new room. This is the old room, but it's just painted. It's got a new floor, and we got a little bit of an echo situation. So hopefully Tommy's going to fix it in post. You're not even going to know what I'm talking about. All right?
But Golly, I hope I do.
Just imagine a little bit of an echo to get the real authentic experience here. But it's good to see you, Tommy. Another week of indie games. What do we got on the plate today for the people?
We have Ruffy in the Riverside. Listen, it is a little echoey, and I hope to God I can fix it, because it sounds like you are in a dungeon. That's all right. We're not playing a dungeon crawler today, but we played Ruffy in the Riverside, a kind of 3D platformer puzzle game, I would say. Decent amount of hype around this game because we don't get a lot of these classic 3D platformers outside of basically Nintendo and sometimes PlayStation, I guess, like putting them out on the AAA stage. So we played it. We're going to let you know our thoughts. It's pretty interesting. It's on Steam, Epic, Nintendo Switch, Xbox, PS5. And it comes in on $19.99. So we'll be talking about that in a bit. But first, let's catch up. How's your weekend? We just had a holiday weekend.
Yeah, we did. It was good. You know, went to the family party. Saw you on Friday for the 4th of July, which was a good time. And then Saturday, we had like what we just learned about, like a nesting party. Basically, we just invited our parents over and they helped us build stuff for like the nursery and all that. So that's like pretty much done, minus like some decor stuff we want to put up. So that feels good. And then let's see, Sunday went to farmer's market, which is good. You know, we just got some produce. Yeah. Every Sunday. So we're trying to go to that during the summer. And then we also went to hung out with our mutual buddy Bags and his lovely fiance, and we went to Icarus Brewing in New Jersey, and down in Brick, New Jersey, folks.
Shout out Brick.
Yeah, where it's their new location. It's like attached to a burger place. Way bigger location for the brewery. It was a good time. Also got to hang out with Willow, their new little pup, who's awesome. And yeah, just had some good burgers. I had the burger of the month. It was an Oklahoma burger. It had what did it have on it? It was like a double smash patty with pepper jack cheese, jalapenos, jalapeno
like that thin mayo sliced jalapeno.
Yeah. It was like jalapeno like mayo on it too, and then like bacon. I wanted the bacon off of it, but they put it on there. It's fine. And then I got it on a sesame seed bun. It was good. Had some hand cut fries, some garlic ranch sauce came with that. It was a good time, you know, good time. So, yeah, it was a busy, I feel like I didn't really get a break. Like, even though it was the holiday weekend, I was so tired today. So I feel like I could use another day, but, you know, that's the way it is. So I'm going to push on.
Well, soon you'll have so many days coming up. That definitely won't be you taking care of a human, a baby one. But that sounds cool. I miss burgers. Honestly, I'm not really eating them. You know, I probably mentioned that every time burgers come up, but I do miss them. My week was good. Went to the same 4th of July party. Shout out to our cousin Tori, who's a pregnant. Happy pregnancy. Very cool. Last Wednesday, I got to go to the Phillies game in a work, like, outing in a suite, so unlimited drinks and food. It was crazy. Speaking of burgers, there's a Shake Shack in Citizens Bank Park where the Phillies play, and like every time we go to these outings, all of a sudden they just come in with just trays of Shake Shack burgers.
Yeah,
and just like, I mean, I didn't have any, but I was slamming hot dogs. You know, I know they're beef hot dogs, but you know, that's not really beef. But
yeah.
You know, it was a good time. I I really love the Phillies. No, I'm kidding. I really love hanging out with my coworkers, so that was really cool. And then Saturday was pretty low key. You know, I went out to dinner with the wife, you know, mowed the lawn. And then yesterday we went to another kind of 4th of July party at a family friend's, and that was cool too. This morning woke up, you know, I was so excited for the week to start. I woke up at 6:30 to go take my car in to pay way too much money to fix it. So that was cool. And then made some tasty dinner tonight, which I'll be talking about in the rec room. And I'm excited to talk about it. But other than that, still cranking with, did I mention last week the Sauvignon Blanc with the jalapeno slices?
You did, yes.
We brought like a whole batch to that party yesterday. It was gone like immediately. It's the drink of the summer, folks. Believe
there you
me
go.
You. Okay. But listen, we got a great, great episode. I'm excited to get into it. We got some indie game news. The biggest indie game news of all time is that we do have a Discord, which is free to join. It's in the show notes below. Unfortunately, we have some not so good news. I think Microsoft had another big layoff of 9,000 people, including people from the gaming division or whatever the heck they call it. And it is affecting a lot of games, including Rare's new game that was supposed to be coming out. I believe that's canceled now. A couple other things. Not good. Not good, man.
Yeah, no, definitely not good. And honestly, I feel like Microsoft has had this, like, over the last few years, it's been like they've started to get, like, in people's good graces, and then, like, they just, like, do another round of layoffs or, like, cancel games, whatever it is. And it's kind of just been like this roller coaster. I feel like I've heard this story from them multiple times, and obviously it's terrible, you know. You hope that these devs and designers and everybody involved can, like, get back, you know, on their feet and maybe even start their own studios. Excuse me. But, yeah, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. You see the profit Microsoft makes, right? It's not just Xbox. I think Xbox is just a small, very small piece of their pie. And it just blows my mind that, like, how many games they end up canceling when, like, there's people out there that are, like, begging for them to, like, you know, bring us something interesting, like, from the single player perspective. And there's been, like, so many games that have had people really excited, and they just end up getting canceled. And then they just come out with, like, another, there's another generic kind of game that doesn't really, you know, do that well rating wise. Or even if it does, it just doesn't have, like, the marketing behind it. Yeah, it just, it sucks to see Microsoft, like, doing this again. Because I feel like, I don't know, people have been really enjoying Game Pass and everything they're doing with that. You know, Steam's supposed to get integrated with Game Pass. That's the rumor. So I just saw a lot of people excited. And then this news comes out and you're like, this is just, it's hard to root for a company when, like, they're still, you know, they're doing this stuff so often. So, yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. I mean, on the flip side, Helldivers 2 is coming in August to Xbox, I guess. I think the same day as Gears of War.
Yes. Release. Yeah. My birthday. There you go.
Your birthday. You will have so much time, I'm sure.
To
be playing those. So we'll play them all for you. But, you know, that is something. But yeah, it is a shame. It's not the end of it. We always talk about that anytime we talk about these layoffs. Not the end, but it's also a great time to dive into some indie games because there's some great ones, and, you know, they're small teams, so they can't really lay off too many people. I mean, unless the whole studio closes. So, and that's a travesty in itself. So, sad stuff, but we do have some happy stuff. I think, I don't know, because all I have in the show notes is game show time.
Yeah, so I just wanted to, I don't know, do something a little bit different. And, you know, I know every now and then we kind of do this little fun thing. So I wanted to do, like, a Family Feud style thing with you.
Okay.
Where basically, obviously, we didn't survey people. I'm using AI to help, like, generate some of these. But just wanted to do, like, a few rounds of some things just to see if you could get them. So Are you up for the game? A little bit of fun.
I am. I guess I think I have to be.
Right? All right. Good.
Like,
all right.
Like nope. And I was like, all right, move to
all right, well, let's go to the review. But this is also, just to let you know, there's only three total answers, so it's not like the full 10 okay. or whatever, you know, up to 10 or whatever. So, all right, here we go. Round one. All right.
Got it.
Name an indie game where the main character doesn't speak in their game.
Oh,
now think, obviously think popular kind of games because there's AI coming from this.
Golly, I'm thinking back on dialogue.
All right, the Stevens Family. Do you want to steal?
Wait a second. Dead Cells.
Yes, that's one of them.
Okay.
Ding! Survey says. Oh yeah, I got to do that. But yes, that is one of them.
I'm gonna stay in the Metroidvania.
Okay,
genre, maybe a smart say move. Hollow Knight.
That is a second one. There you go. And can you round it off with the third one?
Oh man,
that is
tough.
It is in the same realm as the other two.
Is it like Limbo or something?
Nope, not Limbo. I'll give you one more guess. You got anything?
Not speaking in the same realm.
Yeah. It was Hollow Knight, Dead Cells. This game is always kind of put up on that pedestal with them, I would say, pretty often.
It's like a Metroidvania?
It's a platformer. I haven't played it, but I
want
know.
To say Celeste, but I thought that she
it is Celeste. Me. Yes. It does say... So her internal struggles are shown, but she doesn't actually speak at all during the gameplay.
I
so kind of
forgot
go.
That. I guess I was just like interpret it as speaking.
Yeah.
Chime in, folks, if that's incorrect, because we will destroy this AI model that we use. Alan Iverson, of course.
You know, it doesn't have great questions all the time or great reasoning, so it could definitely be wrong. Again,
that's not
I haven't
bad.
Played.
You know, I got plus. Two out of the three without any help. I
yeah.
Think.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Name a primary weapon or tool associated with a famous indie game protagonist.
Ooh.
Only three answers again.
Shovel.
Boom. That's one.
Yeah.
I'm not doing the survey says.
Survey says ding.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. Gee, Willikers. Not, I mean, a gun?
that's not one, but it's a good guess, yeah. It's too general. These next two are pretty specific to the game. One of them you actually mentioned before. That's helpful.
Today? Like, tonight?
Yeah, well, like 5 minutes ago. In the other question.
Oh, I forget what I already said. geez, Louise. What did I say? What did I say?
All right. I'll tell you one of them. It's okay. Nail from Hollow Knight.
Oh,
the nail.
I guess it is a nail, but I always I don't really
like
associate
thing.
It with. With that, yeah. But yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
And the third one is very popular. They just made a movie about this game.
Oh, a pickaxe.
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
Flint and steel.
There.
Gen Z kids, comment.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay. That's fair. That's fair.
We're going to do one more round. All right. We got one more round here. You're doing well. You could win it all. We're gonna do Fast Money next. No, is Fast Money Family Feud or is that?
Yeah, that's
know.
The one where okay. like you do the word association.
Yeah, real quick. Okay. Okay, here we go. Name a primary character. A lot of these are just main character things. from one of these games. Wait, hold on. This doesn't make any sense. Name a main character from an indie game known for using a ranged weapon. And this is also just based on this question alone is just on games we reviewed.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, man. A ranged weapon?
You know, this. Some of these I don't think. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Whatever the main character from Wizard with a Gun was?
Yes, that's one of them. Yeah. All right. All right.
Wizard.
Wizard.
Man. What the hell?
I know. I'll give you a.
I should start doing real Family Feud like quotes. Naked grandma.
What? Huh? Yeah.
Sit on it. Oh, man. All right, you got to give me a hit because.
One of them is the cub.
The cub. Oh, my God.
Apparently, it's a slingshot. I remember. All right, and this last one.
Yeah.
The weapon is primarily a close range weapon, but you can use it from a distance. So I guess it counts in this category. And the character is in the title of the game, and the weapon she uses is in the title of the game too.
Pepper grinder?
Pepper grinder, that's it.
Oh, really?
Because it says you could throw the drill. I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, this one was a tough one. The AI didn't do a great job.
Listen, I think we're keeping our jobs.
Yeah, I think now. So. Yeah, for now, until they get the Steve Harvey bot and then we're done.
Yeah. All right, well, that was fun. I think, you know, a couple of them were doozies, I would say. You know, I appreciate it, though.
Yeah, keep it, you know, on your toes a little bit. Yeah.
Toes, feet. My feet on the bottom of them feel pretty rough. Ruffy in the Riverside is the game that we're reviewing this week. And I'm a really good segue artist. I don't know if they're artists, technically. I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway. We got Ruffy in the Riverside, developed by Zocrates or Zocrates Laboratories UG, and published by Fippen Games. Oh man, that's tough. I said, it's on pretty much all platforms except for PlayStation. No, it's on PlayStation. 1999. Ruffy in the Riverside. You wield the magic swap to copy and paste textures. Turn ice to lava or waterfalls into vines, explore, fight, skate on straw bales, and unleash your imagination in this quirky open-world action game. Dive into an adventure that lets you literally change the world. Do you want to talk about the gameplay first this time?
Yeah, sure. I'll talk about the gameplay here. Let me just load it up as well so the viewers can watch. So this is, as Tommy mentioned, it's kind of, you know, very reminiscent of like old school kind of 3D platformer kind of games. Think Banjo-Kazooie, Spyro, even old school kind of Spyro. So it's very reminiscent of that, especially once we talk about the art style. And you play as a character, Ruffy, obviously, and I don't think I got as far into the game probably as you, so you probably have more to talk like story-wise. Mm-hmm. But yeah, essentially your main mechanic in this game is this like swap power where originally as it's training you, it teaches you to essentially take a painting from a canvas and you're putting it on another painting. And then you start to get a little bit more involved with it, where it's actually like built into like the game mechanics. So you can even see, I believe, in this clip here, this is right in the beginning of the game, you can turn a waterfall into like a wall of vines that allow you to climb up. So it's kind of using this mechanic to not only discover things, but to get to different parts of the map, to traverse things, to go across water, things like that. So that is the main mechanic of the game. So you're going to be solving puzzles in the game. One thing I will say is that this gameplay, whether they intended for this or not, which I imagine they did, it really does nail the kind of like awkwardness or just the kind of how some things feel unpolished of those older games, right? How many times, like, you know, even playing like an older game like Ocarina of Time, like, I remember as a kid, I was just like, I have no idea where to go. Like, it reminded me of when like game designers like didn't fully think about, you know, how am I going to introduce the character to the next area, right? It kind of was like up to you sometimes. I mean, you know, for a good portion of it, you know, you were able to figure out, but there were definitely times in like those older kind of games where I was like, I don't even recognize this as something I can interact with. This game does that stuff too, from what I've, well, you know, at least from what I played, where, you know, even with this swap ability, you start to kind of realize, oh, I can swap like that material with that material. There's like things you start discovering as you're playing, where you are, you know, you kind of didn't realize that it was like a mechanic or interactable in the game. So I think it nails that. I don't know if that's like a design decision or just something that, you know, that I imagine it's a design decision just because this game is clearly inspired by those older kind of 3D games. But it's very interesting. And then there's also a 2D part of the game, which I didn't get to, but I know it exists in the game because I've seen it in the gameplay, where like there's even things you can find in the world where you become kind of this 2D character and you're able to, you know, complete puzzles that way as well. So it also kind of has like those little modern twists as well. But it even does have like a very primitive kind of quest system and like the way things work. Like, I feel like a lot of the game wasn't modernized from the gameplay standpoint. It really is truly like a successor to those older games without being like overly modern. Like, they could have made the quest system maybe a little bit more interesting. You know, there's things in the gameplay where you're like, okay, if I played another 3D platformer, it would have these kind of quality of life things. But in this game, it just doesn't have some of those things. So yeah, your goal, from what I could tell in the game, is to find these marbles, which are, they're kind of these like mystical sort of like rock sort of things that can actually change your environment around you temporarily. To allow you to solve more puzzles and unlock more things. So it's really just, it reminded me just so much of like Banjo-Kazooie, you know, those older kind of like 3D platformer games where you're, you know, just going on an adventure, exploring different things, talking with weird people. It's definitely got the weirdness vibe down pretty well. But I know you probably played more of this game. So what did you think overall about the gameplay?
So hopping in, I immediately was kind of transported back to N64 days, you know, Mario 64, Banjo-Kazooie, Paper Mario, obviously with some aspects here as well. And the first thing that I noticed was it was pretty ambitious, right? I think there's a lot in here, and certainly like a love letter to those games, with some interesting choices on like modern elements. Like, I think that it's a little weird. So, you know, the mechanics, obviously you talked about the copy and paste, which is a really cool but ambitious kind of mechanic, because like in, let's say, a bigger studio or a more like, you know, finished game, I would say probably would have explored it more and like would have let you kind of copy and paste a lot more things, because, you know, it felt a little bit limited on what you could do and kind of really tied to the main quest of the game rather than like some, there's some like auxiliary stuff, but it didn't feel as sandboxy as I think it probably would have been if maybe that was the goal. I'm not sure, but it felt like sometimes I just had to figure out, all right, is this for a quest and should I have to use this mechanic rather than like I should be using it all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of how I felt about that. It's a neat mechanic when it works. But certainly there's some other interesting gameplay choices here where there's a stamina bar like you would get in some other games, you know, recently, I think is more, you know, makes more sense. And I don't know if it necessarily made a lot of sense in this game, because why wouldn't I be able to really just run as much as I want? Or like, why wouldn't it just like stop? Like, why would I need the stamina bar? Because if you get mm-hmm. coins, it kind of refills anyway. So what are we kind of doing here? There's a lot of coins. So it felt like kind of just an addition to it. But other than that, I will say, and this kind of will tie into the story, but like it does affect the gameplay a little bit. The first like chunk of the game is very dialogue heavy. And I'll talk about whether that dialogue is good or not. But like it is a little bit of a slog to get through the first part of the game before you start actually going into the different worlds and like kind of exploring the meat and potatoes of this. But mostly it is a pretty straightforward 3D platformer, which I didn't feel, it was more puzzles I felt like than actual platforming for the most part, because it was pretty easy to traverse most of the world, I thought. And, you know, it was fine. It was a pretty actualized world, and we'll talk about that. But I felt like I was playing more of a puzzle game with this kind of 3D platformer skin on it. And I don't think that's a bad thing, but it felt like I was going from puzzle to puzzle rather than kind of like trying to like get past a certain obstacle, I guess. But the rest of the game, I do really appreciate the ambition here in terms of what's going on. I think that a lot of people will enjoy this, especially those who really enjoyed the classic 90s like 3D platformers, which you definitely nailed it on the head when you said like it lacks some of that polish. And I don't know if that's intentional, but like it definitely felt janky. And like not in the worst way, but you know, we'll talk about that in the performance side. I think that there's probably some jank that doesn't need to mm-hmm. be janky. But overall, it is going to be a pretty cute and fun gameplay experience. But for those out there looking for a true like 3D platformer, I didn't feel like I was playing Banjo or like I was playing Mario 64 or anything like that. I felt like I was playing Ruffy in the Riverside, and that's totally fine. But I think it's just worth noting that it's going to be more puzzle focused rather than platformer focused. But that was my take on it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree from like, you know, the amount I played. And I think also, you know, you bring up like a good point about them not taking full advantage of that swap mechanic, because I feel like that, you know, it adds to like the aha moments that you get in like Nintendo games, or even like, you know, Banjo-Kazooie, where you're just like, yeah, it just, you're like, you know, let me try this. And you're like, oh my God, that worked. It did feel like in this game, because there's only like a limited number of things you can swap with like per puzzle, that I don't know, even just from an art standpoint, you know, when we talk about art, but like certain things would also be wood and you couldn't actually copy them, but you could copy other things that were near you that were wood, like things like that, with just like these inconsistencies that I never really felt like super satisfied for like figuring out a puzzle. I was just kind of like, okay, you know, this is I was going to get this eventually because there's just such limited options of how to solve this. So, yeah, no, I definitely, you know, kind of got that vibe as well that this is. And yes, there's a lot of dialogue in the beginning of the game. And, you know, it just, it kind of like missed the mark for me, like from the gameplay standpoint, where I thought it was going to hook me more because I do like these old kind of games. But it also kind of made me realize that maybe, you know, some of those things about those older games, like they just don't age that well. You know, and like camera angles and like things like that, where I just think it's tough to overcome those, even when you have a few modern elements in the game.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think, like, because what it's missing with the swap mechanic is that, like, in a classic 3D platformer, if there was a mechanic, right, I feel like, whether, like, I'm just going to keep going back to Mario 64 because it's what I know best, right? But, like, and this is why that game is so, like, popular among speedrunners, is that you can use Mario's mechanics of jumping and diving to, like, cheese parts of the game. I felt like I could not, like, there was no, like, creative outlet for me to cheese parts of this game. I felt like you just get to the puzzle, you try to solve it, and then you move on, which is fine. I think that's totally fine, but it's definitely something that I think took away from the charm that was there in the gameplay. But there are some positive stuff, things, and unfortunately, it's not the story. So let's get to the story. You know, in my opinion, I thought it was very bland, very empty, kind of like paint by numbers. Because you get a lot of it, and you just feel like it's kind of cliche, you're the chosen one, which is whatever, you know. Listen, I know the anime lovers out there, that's every anime you watch, but, you know, it's a little diggy, y'all, sorry. But, but like, it didn't feel like it had much substance for the amount of dialogue they're throwing at us, and, you know, I didn't, like, I think there were some things that were supposed to be funny, and I just kind of fell flat for me. Now, maybe if I was a little bit younger, it definitely has a younger child's game kind of feel, but it's kind of interesting. I don't know if a kid would want to play this because it's not kind of what they grew up on. So I would be interested to see how a child would react to this game. But the story definitely fell flat for me. I think that Ruffy had no real, like, character, right? Just kind of like, I'm a guy that, like, I like to, you know, I'm the chosen one, I guess. Let me just do it. It didn't feel like there was, you know, kind of this reluctant hero thing going on or anything like that. And you're just kind of thrown into this thing where you just got to find these letters and it's a little weird. It's a little weird, but what'd you think?
Yeah, I wasn't really, like, super into the story either, and again, there's a lot of dialogue in the beginning where it just doesn't feel like there needs to be that much, especially since the story is kind of like, or at least like the protagonist is like just cliche, where it's just like, yeah, I understand, you know. And honestly, with, you know, probably the majority of people that are playing this game played those older games, so it's kind of like I felt like those older games didn't really have a ton of dialogue. I mean, there's definitely some like set up a story, but, you know, they focus more on the gameplay. I just felt, yeah, there's a lot of talking in the game, and you know how I feel personally about like dialogue in a game. I'm honestly at a certain point, I was like, all right, just like get through it. And one thing it also doesn't or doesn't do in the story that I think would, be perfect for a game like this. Let's highlight some of the keywords in the dialogue here, you know, I was like reading through it, but I'm like, it's pretty I feel like normal for like a game like this to like highlight at least like directions you need to go or things you need to find, things like that. So that, you know, that's one thing with like the story that, well, you know, just tied to the dialogue, but yeah, I didn't find it like too interesting either. Honestly, it just got to the point where I was like, I just want to get through this because I just don't like care enough and it's not like that interesting of a story. I do think that, you know, once we talk about like the art, but I think like Ruffy kind of could have been a really cool story, just from the way that Ruffy looks and like, I don't know, just I feel like they could have done more with kind of the assets that they had. But again, I didn't, you know, complete the story or, you know, get like incredibly far into the game from a story standpoint. It's kind of just exploring a lot, but it, yeah, it didn't wow me, and it didn't, I guess, persuade me to like want to pursue the story more. It was more of like checking a box to get the quest done and just seeing what other things I can unlock and areas I can find.
Yeah, the keyword thing is like such like a big miss here, because there's oftentimes you're going through dialogue and it might not really matter that much. But then there's time they'll just say, this is what you got to do in the quest, but it just kind of blends in with the rest of the dialogue. You're just like,
yeah,
I go back and talk to this person, you know, and with the quest, and this kind of goes into the gameplay, you know, the quests are fine. There's no like, at least in the early game, there's no like true fast travel. Now, like once you get a little bit further in the game, you can kind of ride like a hay bale, which actually like makes things like go super quick and is like actually pretty fun to do. But you know, until then, some of the quests feel a little bit tedious, but
yeah.
With the story though, just a little bit bland, but visuals wise, I think this is one of the standouts of the game. It like, you know, it is so itself that, you know, it can't even help it. Right, you go through this world, you're like, wow, they really built this up. It's chaotic, but I think it actually works for this game, because like there's so much going on, especially on like throughout like the main area, like where you're going to spend a decent amount of time in your first like hour or so with the game, and you're like, wow, this is like, it's almost like there's no empty space at points. You're just like, they're just throwing things everywhere. But I think it works for this game. You know, it has this Paper Mario style like character design that's like really neat. Ruffy just looks so cool. Like, it's kind of a shame that like some of the other stuff isn't really connecting here, and like maybe some of it can be fixed, I'm not really sure, but like Ruffy really stood to be like, as a character, a great indie character. Right.
Mm-hmm.
The design is just so weird and unique. It's like a little bear with a strange Ewok hood on it. And you're just like, this is super fun to look at and watch. And has the little bee companion. And the world itself looks, in my opinion, like it looks truly like where this kind of like homage to the original games like shines. Right. It's just like, I feel like I'm watching playing a classic like N64 era 3D platformer based on how this looks alone. So I thought they really nailed that there. And, you know, I don't love the dialogue font, to be honest. That's one thing I would say. And then also the overworld map, I thought was pretty atrocious. It was just too busy. It felt like I was like, honestly, I clicked into it and it felt nostalgic in a way, and like not a good way. It felt like I was looking at a Neopets map, if anybody remembers Neopets. But I felt like we were like, it's pretty close to like a home run visually for me, you know, with some like minor stuff that I didn't really like, mostly the font and the overworld map. But what would you think here?
Yeah, no, I think largely like it's a success in the art department. It, like you said, it reminds me of those older games, and then I feel like the kind of Paper Mario, you know, character design is like what almost like modernizes it a little bit more, because I guess it's like the contrast of like the 3D world and then like the 2D kind of characters. Although when the characters, like, they do have multiple kind of like angles that they turn at, so it almost looks like a 3D character that's like in stop motion kind of, which is just a really cool art style. I agree about Ruffy. I think looks so cool. Even the mole guy, Sir Edler, like he's really cool. I could see him, like, you know, I don't know, being like a move that Ruffy has, right, or something, if he was to be added to like the Fray Makers or whatever. Or, you know, smash, but definitely really great design. I do agree about the font for the dialogue. I mean, it does remind me of like the older games kind of, but I feel like that's one of the things that could have just been a little bit more modernized. Same with like some of the UI elements. They're just like, they almost just feel, rather than it feeling like a one of those older games, it just feel unfinished to me, where it just like, you know, I don't know, let's make the quest screen look a little bit better. I know this is probably against like maybe their design principles. They wanted to be like true to sticking to that kind of older school design, but I don't know. That sort of stuff is like what feels dated to me, where I'm like, this didn't need to be like this for me to like enjoy the gameplay. So those are kind of my qualms with the art, but I mean, that's like, you know, that's just small potatoes compared to like really the hero I think of the game is the art. It pulls you in, you know. I think it's part of the reason we were interested in trying the game out. I think it's a part of the reason also it's been like I'd say a mildly successful like marketing play. Like I've seen this game for a while, you know. It's might have even been at PAX, and it's always got eyes on it. So it's definitely a great job from the art side of things, overall. But I think another winner with the game though is the sound. You want to talk about the sound?
Yeah, specifically the soundtrack, I think it's just so awesome. It's so much fun and weird and strange, but sticks out to you right away. Even like, I mean, mostly the main theme is just like, oh, I will know this is Ruffy in the Riverside anytime I hear it going forward. It's just like so strange and fun. I wonder if we can find when it pops up for people to listen to. But basically, it's just a really like funky, reminds you of like Banjo-Kazooie, Donkey Kong 64, like the rare, the rare era of 3D platformers just kind of nails it. The sound effects are fine. I think sometimes they get a little repetitive, I would say. Like, you know, a lot of giggling and weird noises, but like in a vacuum, it works totally. It just, the more you play it, there's just less kind of variation. It can get a little bit much, but other than that, I think that like the sound of this game is like a real home run for what this game is trying to be. And the soundtrack is honestly one of the better ones we've listened to, I think, in some time, especially with that main theme. Just like, you know, when I listen to like a soundtrack of a indie game, I'm like, will I know this is the game if I hear it in a vacuum? And if I do, like, obviously there's some games that like don't need that, but like the fact that like it stuck out to me immediately was like a good sign. And then the rest of the game sounded great as well. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the theme song and, you know, the main soundtrack is just awesome. I'm going to see if I can get it to play. I think it's definitely at the beginning of the game. I don't know if it's in this video. No, this isn't. This isn't it.
I mean, that sounds a lot like Banjo.
Yeah. But you get an idea. Little sound effects. But it's not, that's not that soundtrack. Yeah, we'll see. Definitely look it up if you can.
Look it up, folks.
Yeah, because it is pretty good. And it's actually was like, surprised me. Like, as soon as I booted up the game, I was like, oh, this is like really well done. And I think, you know, you're totally right where you would be able to tell that this is Ruffy in the Riverside from that soundtrack, which is not an easy thing to do. I feel like a lot of the games we cover, we usually say, oh, like if this is just generic and like we would never know it's attached to this game. This game does a good job with its music of making it, you know, the soundtrack for Ruffy. Like, that's what it is. So very well done. I agree about the sound effects. There's one in particular where I was playing before, and I think it's like a guy just going like, like laughing. And it's like part of like the, I don't know if it's part of the soundtrack or if it's like a sound effect of like something triggering near me. I don't really know, but it is kind of weird. But I guess, you know, those games back then also had weird sound effects. You know, Ikom Bokom from Banjo-Kazooie and stuff. It's just like weird noises. So, yeah, it's I think it's a win in the sound department because of that soundtrack. But if that music wasn't there, I probably would think of this a bit lower. So it really kind of saved it for me, I'd say, overall.
I think I can play it on my end. You probably won't be able to hear it, but the listeners will be able to hear it. Let me see if I can just bring this up. Dude, that was pretty good. You were on beat.
Oh, cool. Perfect. I heard it.
Did you hear it through my headphones, maybe?
No, I didn't hear it.
It was pretty loud. Hopefully not too loud for the listeners. But, hey, let's talk about the performance. This is I did have some issues. Just here and there, just like choppiness, right? Loading up the environment sometimes was just like kind of like shake. And it wasn't a pleasant experience, like on the eyes, really. You're just like, oh boy. Like every single time I go from like one area to another, it feels like, you know, this game's really struggling. That's something that could be fixed. I don't know about any of the other things we've kind of had complaints about. But it was a little jarring. But how about you? Did you run into the same issues?
Yeah, I did. I played on the Switch 2. Which you did well, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it felt like those loading issues, like when you'd go to a new area, it would kind of get a little choppy, like you mentioned. It felt to me like that wasn't because I was on, like, you know, the Switch 2, obviously, I think has more than good enough hardware to run a game like this. So it felt like a problem with the game. And yeah, that just, you know, it hinders the experience a little bit because in my mind, I don't expect a game like this to. For that to happen, right? Mm-hmm. Also, just something that was just interesting to me, and I wanted to bring this up just in the performance section, but it also is tied to the art and the gameplay, is that they section off different parts of the map. So as you're kind of you know, approaching a new area, a new region, you'll kind of see just like an image of that region. And then as you get close to it, it'll load you into that region. I thought that was a little jarring at first because I just expected, again, a game that kind of looks like this. That's, you know, it's 2025. Like it felt like that didn't need to happen. Probably. Again, I'm not a game designer, so I don't know for sure, but I've definitely played games that have been more intensive than this, and they had less loading screens when exploring, especially when some of the areas didn't feel that big that I was exploring, where I was like, okay, I have to load into another area right now. So I don't know if that's like something that could be further optimized, or maybe that doesn't happen as often. But to me, it just was a little jarring to like walk towards an area and just easily be able to tell that that was like an image of the next area, and then when I got to it, it would load to a black screen and it would load in the new area, and it just kind of hindered my gameplay a little bit, just like the, you know, the odd choppiness that happens when loading a new area. And I think maybe, you know, that choppiness happens because it's loading a new area without a loading screen. So I think there's like those two things are kind of related somehow, but I wish that they could optimize it further so like both of them were just not noticeable. I didn't expect it with a game like this, to be honest. So it's kind of shocked me a bit when it kept happening as I was playing.
Yeah. It was a bit much, but hopefully they can kind of balance that out. But
yeah,
that does bring us to our final ratings, which are as follows. Certified Fresh Juice. These are our Balatros of the world. You know, just freaking indie gems. Norb Apolog. After that, we have a steal. Games that we think are quite good. Maybe not the greatest, but they are going to be really good experiences, and we definitely recommend them. After that, we have On Sale. These are games that, you know what? Probably you know, if he got it on sale, makes sense, or just could use, has good qualities, but not perfect. You know, a lot of games fall into this category. After that is manager special. These are games that if maybe it was free to play on a deep discount, sure, maybe you want to check it out. Or if you're just really into the genre and maybe we didn't really connect with it. You know, we see that there's potential there for people to enjoy. And then finally is Spoiled Milk, which is games that we don't necessarily recommend. I'll start.
Yeah, do it.
On the Riverside. This is a story of a girl. Ruffy on the Riverside is a tough one to rate. Right, I think that there's a ton of work that went into this, no doubt, and has like a lot of good things going. The gameplay experience was about average for me. I once I got past the issues that I had, I did end up having a good time with it. Right, you know, there's just some kind of barrier that I had to get through. Some people might not find it a barrier. But the story was very bland. I could have used less of it, I think. Or if you're going to have that much, maybe just add more to it. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I think the general aesthetics kind of were a home run. Like, it looks great, sounds cool. Like, that soundtrack is awesome. So with all that considered, I think it's probably like maybe a low on sale. I don't think that this game is terrible by any means. I wish it was a little bit closer to a 3D platformer rather than a puzzle game, it felt like, with like 3D platformer elements. But that being said, Ruffy on the Riverside, I will remember this game, no doubt. And, you know, maybe if there's a big update, I could see myself coming back to it. I think other people are seem to be really enjoying it, so I could be in the minority here, but it's a low on sale for me.
Yeah, you know, I give it the same exact score. I was thinking low on sale. You know, I think if you picked up this game for $10, probably have a good time with it. You probably wouldn't be too mad, you know, about what you spent with it, especially like people around like our age that, you know, can get the nostalgia part of this. I would say if you're someone that doesn't have any nostalgia, you know, for those kind of games, you're probably better off picking up like the Spyro Remastered Trilogy, the Crash Trilogy, you know, things like that probably would just serve you better overall. You know, I know they're not indie, but, you know, they're good games regardless. And yeah, so I'm giving it a low on sale. I think that the art carried this game, and the gameplay just needs work in general. It's a weird game, though. You're right, because I feel like some of the gameplay decisions that we don't like were intentional, right? Because they're trying to kind of be like those older games. So maybe that's kind of a, you know, it's just a roadblock for us, but maybe not for other people. I'm right there with you with a low on sale. I think if they made a second Ruffy, I'd definitely have my eye on it. You know, I'd be like, okay, what kind of improvements are you making to this one? But I don't think I'll really be going back and playing too much of it. Maybe with my daughter at some point, but I probably will also just show her better games than Ruffy too, but yeah, I'm giving a low on sale.
Fair. Next week we have Soulstone Survivors. We haven't done a Survivor like in a while, so that'll be fun to hit. And we do have some listener questions. First one comes from Bags, mentioned at the top of the show and at the bottom of the show. Bags asks, what?
You sound like you're underwater.
I do.
Oh, you're back now. It might have been me. Never mind. I think it's probably me.
Okay. All right. I'm back. I'm leaving it in. Bags asks, which games are on your gaming Mount Rushmore?
My gaming Mount Rushmore. All right. So if this is mine in particular, like my Mount Rushmore, not what games I think are like overall considered to be on the Mount Rushmore. I'm going with Gears of War 1. I'm going to go with that, okay, because I got to say that. I'm going with Balatro. I think it is like just amazing. I love Balatro. And let's see, two more games that are on there. I'm probably gonna put Elden Ring, Dark Souls. I don't know which one. Probably maybe Dark Souls 3 on there. I really love Dark Souls 3. And then the fourth one, I'm gonna put Grounded on there because I love survival games and Grounded is my favorite survival game. So I'm gonna put that one on there. I almost threw The Last of Us on there, but I'm gonna put Grounded on there just because it's, you know, second one's coming out this month and I just can't wait. So those are my four. We got Gears 1. What else did I say? I said Grounded. I said
Balatro.
And Elden Ring. Yeah, we'll just go with those. Okay, mixing it up. Yeah, there's probably another one I'm like just forgetting right now, but off the top of my head, those four, I'll go with that. But
all right.
What about you, Tom?
I got to throw Balatro on as well, right? You know, that game is not escaping my life. It just really isn't. Ocarina of Time, no doubt, there automatically. And then it starts to get a little tough, I think. I'm looking back, probably Game Boy Advance Fire Emblem.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my favorite games of all time. And then, man. Oh.
I forgot a game that I wanted to put on mine.
Oh, which one?
We're going to take down Grounded, and we're going to put Gauntlet Dark Legacy on there.
Yeah, I was thinking Gauntlet Dark Legacy. Yeah. Oh, man. I'm thinking of the GameCube era in general, because it's just like, Melee is such an important game to me. Spent most, like, so much time playing it. The original Animal Crossing on GameCube, although it was on the N64 in Japan first, I have so many fond memories of that game. I, like, literally, the original Animal Crossing, I would set my GameCube clock to opposite so I can do daytime activities at night. Like, me and my sister, we would, like, wait till our parents went to sleep. We'd get up and be like, all right, we're playing Animal Crossing. So, like, I think about that. It's really that fourth spot is tough. It's got to be a GameCube era game, you know. Like Arkham City could definitely get in there. That's not GameCube era. I played that on the Xbox, but I got to give it to OG Animal Crossing. That soundtrack is freaking awesome. I could listen. Like I pop on YouTube compilations of just Animal Crossing OG music and just like. Relax. It's a problem. But yeah, that's a great question, Matt. It's a tough one to answer, to be honest.
Yeah, and I'm a firm believer that the GameCube is the best console that's ever existed.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, like game wise, just like the system itself. I look back at that console so fondly, where I'm just like, man. Even I remember having fun with games like that.
PM3. No one else.
I was playing Spy Hunter. It was like some like ripoff of like James Bond. I had so much fun playing that game. You had like a car that turned into a boat. Like it was just so many random games that I played on GameCube. You know, freaking like Tack and the Power of Juju.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Boomerang. Guy, Ty the Boomerang, whatever the hell that was called. So many great games. GameCube was just awesome. And then you got your flagships as well. But
Melee. I mean, some people hate on Super Mario Sunshine. I think that game, I'd take it over Galaxy, right? Like, I'm one of those people. Like, I just love the mechanics of the water jet flood. So
yeah,
it was sick. Luigi's Mansion was, oh dude,
yeah, double dash, dude.
Double dash. It was just banger after banger, man.
Yeah, they were cooking over there, man.
Holy moly! But man, he got us sent down a GameCube rabbit hole. Capolo asks, well, says first, I need to find a new mobile game. Please recommend me one. Oof. Baltro?
Baltro? Yeah. Once Human, which is on mobile. Actually, the last mobile game I did play, Capolo, is Backyard Baseball just came out on mobile not long ago. So if you're, you know, you have nostalgia for the Backyard Baseball PC games, now on mobile, I think it's coming to like the Switch too as well. I don't know. I haven't been playing a lot of mobile games. I usually have some sort of like puzzle game that I'm into, but I haven't really been playing much on my phone at all, other than Balatro from time to time. Mm. So it's tough for me to know. You might have something that you've been jamming.
Oh, golly. It's been like mostly Balatro, but I think I mentioned Rogue Words. I think Capolo downloaded that. Loop Hero is on mobile. So is Blasphemous and Dredge. Those are all great indie games. Plunder Panic is on mobile, which is a fun one. I don't know if it's that great to like play by yourself, but old school RuneScape. How about that?
Yeah. Tiny Wings.
I think we're just naming all like PC games that ended up on mobile. But, you know, Jetpack Joyride, if you never played that, that is a banger.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a nice time killer. So
yeah, no, definitely. Temple Run, little Temple Run action.
Yeah. Subway Surfers, if you want to like be cool with the kids. Minecraft is on mobile. That's like probably its biggest platform at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good one.
So there you go.
Let us know what you play, Capolo, because maybe it's none of these. And, you know, you can teach us a new mobile game. Yeah.
K-more asks, we need to leave Earth ASAP. What? You can only bring one game with you. Which one would it be and why? I'm going to just eliminate Balatro from the equation here.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the obvious answer. Just like, that would be the perfect time killer.
You know, obviously, like, what comes to mind is like, what game could I bring that could help me, like, teach me to live off of Earth? But I'm going to assume that's all been handled, and I don't need, I'm not like I'm not on a desert island or something. I'm like, you know, it would have to be a game with a lot of replayability. To be honest, I mean, like, No Man's Sky comes to mind just because it's like endless, basically, right? So they're always kind of finding stuff to do, but I assume it wouldn't get updated because I guess everyone on Earth isn't around anymore, so I don't know. This is a tough one because you want to choose something that's got a lot of content to it. What are you thinking, Tom? Or maybe you don't. Maybe you just, you know, want something so nice and sweet.
I have one of two games, and they're both from the same series. I think either OG Super Smash on the N64 with the N64 controllers.
Mm-hmm.
Or the most recent Smash Ultimate from the Switch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I'm saying that is I believe that we're going to, if we're leaving Earth, we're probably going to need to resettle, recolonize or whatever. Not colonize. We're going to have to get better at being humans again. And I think that we're going to get alphas, right? And stuff like that. And we're going to like have fights. If we can condition ourselves to be like, let's settle it on Final Destination. No items.
That's no violence, nothing. Which just everything goes through Smash. All decisions.
And this is why I think that N64 would be the better one because there's less teching and stuff like that. And like, you know, because Melee would have been too much, right? Because you get one Melee nerd and he's the king of our society, right? And like, we're really stuck. Now, there's certainly good OG Smash players, but like, I feel like that game was, you know, N64 level wonky, so like, you get a little bit more room to breathe. Which I also think, like, the Smash Ultimate can be forgiving for newer players as well. So like, I think something like that to be like, listen, you know, you want this stock of corn, you gotta fight me for it on Hyrule Castle, N64, no items, no, only ba-bombs, and we're doing it.
All right.
My idea.
All right. Hey, you know, I think it's good. I didn't know if you were going to, I thought you were going to take it in the direction of like, if we run into other life forms, like we can show them, you know, be like, ah, you know,
this is how I spend most of my summers.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like, what's a summer?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Our summers are 70 years long on this planet. And our nights are 50 years long. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's what I would do.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
Yeah, no, I like it. I like it because it's also, you know, you're making it a tool. It's not just a game anymore. It's a tool. So
yeah.
I like it. Yeah.
Well, that'd be funny. Like, also, like, you just bring, like, I don't know, 2010 Madden.
Oh,
just
my God,
be like,
yeah,
these alien life forms and be like, listen, you don't understand. Adrian Peterson was unbelievable, man. Look at how good he was. Unstoppable. You could draft him and get him on Michael Vick's team, and then you just like would always win.
Yeah. Win the whole thing. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, we have one last question. It comes from MF98170, who asks, how do you like to eat your PB&J?
Yeah. So my ideal PB&J is I like to get probably like, I like it on potato bread, but I probably just go with like sourdough. I throw it in the toaster. I toast it, take it out. I get creamy peanut butter. I put it on one side, and then I put it on the other side. I double up the peanut butter, and then I put some strawberry jelly in the middle. And then when I put the two pieces of bread together, it's like the peanut butter like fuses the jelly in the middle, right? So the jelly's not coming out. And then I cut diagonally. And it's nice toasted PB&J. And I do like it with a glass of milk, you know.
Okay.
And I do really like it with like potato chips on the side. Pretty good. So, yeah, that's my ideal one. Tommy, I know you're a big fan.
No, I don't like PB&J. I don't like peanut butter around any sweets, really. No chocolate peanut butter. I mean, I'll eat it, right? That's always the case with any of this. But, like, I want, like, I'll be down with a peanut butter burger. But if once I see, like, it's a peanut butter jelly burger, I'm out. I'm like, get that away from me. But if I were, like, I've eaten PB&J a couple times in my life. If I were going to have PB&J, it would probably be, like, a raspberry jelly or jam or whatever. And a chunky peanut butter, certainly. Mm-hmm. And then maybe, like, I don't really like cinnamon raisin bread, but that would be the time, right?
Yeah.
If I'm committing to the sweetness, we're going all in, right? Make it a whole thing. That's my my take.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know? You know, I'm someone that, like, generally doesn't like the savory and the sweet to mix other than, like, PB&J.
Interesting.
Yeah, or, like, certain other things in general. But, yeah, there you go. I'm a big PB&J guy. I had one today for lunch.
Okay, well, what's your go-to lunch sandwich? Like, making at home.
Oh, I mean, I like have like if there's like cold cuts in the house.
Yeah, if you've got unlimited cold cuts, whatever. What would you choose to bring to school or whatever?
Yeah, I like a Genoa salami, some ham, probably some like provolone, like some spicy mustard, just on like potato bread. I would bring that. typically. I could probably like mix it up now. I mean, like I've had lately, like, you know, I get like a piece of sourdough bread. I got like a chicken cutlet on there. I got some like hot pepper spread and like some, what are they called? Sun-dried tomatoes or whatever. Put it on there with some jalapenos as well.
Okay, Emeril Lagasse over here.
Yeah, yeah. So it's pretty good, you know? And then I like, I got the bread all toasted. It's pretty, it's nice. Yeah, it's very good. Nice. It's delicious. Yeah, so that's been lately, but talking about like bringing to school and stuff, that's what I would bring typically, like a cold cut sandwich like that. What about you?
Back when I was in school, back when I was banging, you know, it was usually Genoa salami, cheese, like provolone or like sometimes American or cheddar, spicy mustard. Sometimes I would do the sliced pepperoni, like the lunch meat pepperoni.
Yeah,
same deal. I would do turkey sandwiches. I know you don't like turkey, but I love a turkey sandwich. But like my true go-to, like if I'm gonna have like a lunch sandwich, I am a tuna fish, like bean. I love tuna fish, right? You know, just that's the good. I had a tuna fish sandwich when we were in Maine.
Yeah,
at Bissell Brothers. It was good. Yeah, it was pretty good. So
good. Yeah. How do you feel about bologna? You a bologna guy?
It's fine. It's fine. I prefer like mortadella, right? It's like a little bit like more of an elevated bologna. If that makes sense. It's not my favorite meat, but, I don't know. I like it when they cook it like a fried bologna, right? That's good stuff.
Yeah. I've had bologna, you know, I slip it in the sandwiches every now and then, but I don't even know if it's a meat. Is it even a real meat?
It's meat? It's a
meat. Yeah.
It's like a giant hot dog.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, sliced, but
let's go with me.
You know, no complaints. All checks out here, brother. But speaking of all checking out, we got to check out this podcast, but not before we go to the rec room where we recommend something that perhaps isn't an indie game. What do you have to recommend this week?
So this past weekend, my wife and I finished the latest season of The Bear, season 4. I think I recommended The Bear in another rec room. Really great show. Season 4 was fantastic. I'm not going to spoil anything for those who are still watching it. But my wife, she wasn't like super impressed with season 3. I thought season 3 was fine. It was kind of just like laying a lot of groundwork, I felt like, for season 4. But season 4 was like just, I thought the pacing was great. The acting was obviously great. And just like the character development and like closure you get for certain things. It was just really well done. And it actually, you know, makes me excited for more of The Bear. Just because there's so many things I want to know still. But yeah, really great season. Highly recommend The Bear. And yeah, it's a good show. It's a good show. You know, and it will give you anxiety, but I will say this season probably had less anxiety than previous seasons, so that was good. But yeah, good show for sure.
Yeah, I feel like they're gonna. I mean, like they had to kind of tone down the anxiety a little bit because eventually people are gonna find the show later in life and then binge it all, and then they're gonna have like heart attacks. But I'm excited to watch it. Probably won't until Love Island's over, which my wife's been watching. That's on every night, so you know, we got a little time. But my rec room is a style of hot dog.
Ooh.
You know, I'm eating a lot of hot dogs these days. Don't tell my general practitioner, but tonight we tried Seattle style hot dogs, which traditionally is from Seattle, but we have it in New Jersey. But it is typically like caramelized onions, cream cheese, which is crazy, right? And sliced fresh jalapenos. And then you can add whatever else if you want. But we didn't do that. And I think it was absolutely delicious. Like, I was skeptical. I wanted to try it because I've been kind of on this hot dog journey. I wanted to try it, but I was skeptical of the cream cheese.
Yeah.
The cream cheese was killer. It was so good. I started writing letters to my local senator. I'm like, we got to make this a New Jersey hot dog. This is like the best hot dog I've ever had in my life. It was so good. And man, oh man, it was a good time. I also made like a special side hot dog, you know, kind of a brainchild of mine that I had. I was like, oh, I'll be making caramelized onions. I kind of want to try this kind of hot dog with caramelized onions. I made a... like a horseradish sauce, like a creamy horseradish sauce. I don't know if you're into that.
Yeah, sure.
Put it on the hot dog.
Mm-hmm.
Caramelized onions, provolone cheese, melted the provolone cheese on top. It was like a French dip hot dog.
Yeah.
I'm calling it the French rip. It was so good, man. I mean, I didn't have any au jus. I told my wife we should try making like a jus out of hot dog water. She was not into that.
Jesus.
That would be a little bit much. But like a regular, like, you know, jus would be really, really nice. That was killer. The French rip. Try it out, folks, if you want to try that. It was so good. But the Seattle hot dog, honestly, delicious. Caramelized onions giving a nice, like, you know, savory sweetness, along with the cream cheese on the bottom, give it a nice kind of texture with those fresh jalapenos, like a fresh, peppery, spicy bite on top.
Yeah.
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. I think, it sounds pretty good. Sounds pretty good. You know, I think cream cheese is like one of those things, because I'm trying to remember what else I've heard people put it on that was like, oh, that's weird. But it's like one of those things that I feel like is consistently good on other things that you think it wouldn't be good on. So I need to try some cream cheese on there, and sounds pretty good to me. Was it just regular cream cheese, or you have
regular,
it like
regular Philadelphia cream cheese?
All right. Yeah.
You know, it definitely
Seattle and Philly, huh, coming together.
Seattle and Philly, you know. definitely got the wheels turning for a future like party dip, jalapenos. Okay. Maybe like a really like thinly sliced hot dog that you get all crispy, you throw it in the air fryer, make it almost like bacon.
Yeah.
Mix that in. Oh, we're really cooking, folks.
Cooking. You could even do like pigs in a blanket with like a cream cheese dip kind of thing or something. You know?
Stop that. Oh, man.
Something like that.
You
could
do pigs in a blanket
good.
Like they do sausage rolls over in the UK, right? They usually do the sausage roll, but also they throw like a caramelized onion in there.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I need a party, quick.
Yeah. Holy smokes. Oh, man. But anyway, it's a great episode. I want more hot dogs. I have a problem. You can find me on all platforms at Fresh Buds Pod. I have another podcast called Fresh and Buds. Just had this week, we have Sam O'Byrne on, who is the coverage producer for LSS, the game that makes Flesh and Blood. He also is an actor and a great content creator for Three Floating. You should check that episode out if you're interested. And we can find us on all platforms at Fresh Juice Pod. And Matthew, where can people find you?
Find me at Matty Gorm, G-O-R-M, on all the socials. Haven't been posting lately just because I've been moving stuff into this new office and figuring out the whole setup. So hopefully I'll be posting some stuff in the near future, but there we go. Another ep.
Another fresh juice episode. Stay juicy.